Namaste, beloveds. I apologize for the technical difficulties. I'm having some issues with Blog Talk Radio today. I couldn't put in my own updated pictures for this segment, and I had trouble calling in, so it's one of those days, but that's okay. We're going to just move forward and do what we do. And I'm going to start today off with Honey Call by Tina Marie.
Hello, it's me. Yeah. I'm your wee child, Lady T. But you can call me by my southern name. It's Honey.
Ooh, yeah, I've got to go. Since I got your Honey Call, gonna let the love flow. Nice and slow, let it go. Baby, from the get-go, you've been hitting all to and fro in the go. Up all night like no dough. Amaretto, go fast the way I roll.
Blog Talk acting up again. Okay, we're going to move ahead. That was Honey Call, Tina Marie. It was prematurely interrupted because of difficulties, but like I said, we're moving on. We're not going to even go there with that energy right now. Today's show, exploring the mystery of a sensual lover. And I just want to say this. The topic of this show came about just from my own life lately, things that have been going on and things that I've been finding out about myself. And since this is a show about sacred sexuality, I feel that the need to open up the mystery of sensuality is definitely needed in this time right here today in this space. And the reason I say that is because so many people have sensuality and sexuality mixed up. You know, they go hand in hand. They are intimate lovers, but they're two distinct entities. There's two distinct essences or energies to that. And today we're going to focus on the sensual. And I want to give you, I believe this is Merriam-Webster's definition. And it was funny because I found the definitions to be so different in their presentation. So I'll read you Merriam's first because this was the one that I vibed with most. And this is Merriam's definition for sensual: relating to, devoted to, or producing physical or sexual pleasure. Okay, the full definition: relating to or consenting in the gratification of the senses or the indulgence of appetite. Okay. The next one is devoted to or preoccupied with the senses of appetites, voluptuous. Deficient in moral, spiritual, or intellectual interests, worldly, especially irreligious. I thought that was so deep. I thought that was just so deep. I'm not going to, well, I guess I will. I'll share with you the examples of what they have for sensual. Certain fragrances apparently heighten sensual experiences. The sensual feel of a velvet shirt against the skin. A sharp observer with a pleasing eye for sensual detail, Joffrey weaves a richly textured story in which she effortlessly mingles quotidian amours with historic events, including the partition of India. Okay? The origin of sensual, they have it as a Middle English from late Latin, sensualis, from Latin, sensuosens, known since the 15th century. And these are some words that are synonymous with sensual: carnal, fleshly, luscious, lush, sensuous, voluptuous. Related words: bodily, corporeal, agreeable, delectable, delicious, delightful, dreamy, gratifying, palatable, pleasant, pleasing, pleasurable, scrumptious, epicurean, luxurious, self-indulgent. Now these are opposite of sensual: harsh, painful, uncomfortable, disgusting, foul, hideous, icky. And these are some psychology terms: fetish, hypochondria, intelligence, mania, narcissism, neurosis, pathological, psychosis, Schadenfreude, subliminal. And that was from Merriam-Webster's dictionary. Now, I'm going to give you another definition. Pertaining to, inclined to, or preoccupied with the gratification of the senses or appetites, carnal and fleshly. Lacking in moral restraints, lewd or unchaste, arousing or exciting the senses or appetites, worldly, materialistic, irreligious, or pertaining to the senses or physical sensation. And what I found to be just profound was the anagram. The anagram for sensual is unseals. And I just thought that was so, so deep. I had to go look it up. I'm a poet. So I'm all about words. I'm all about the texture and the sensualness of words. So when I get to an anagram, and the anagram of sensual is to unseal, and I just think that is so broad and so prolific in what sensuality is all about. It is the unsealing of the senses, and there's nothing wrong and worldly and irreligious and lustful and blah, blah, blah about the sensuality. We are born sensual beings. We come here with our senses heightened and ready to absorb everything. So to repress that and to deny that is to really lock ourselves down into a certain way of being, which takes away from our actual sensuality, which in itself is profane, because God gave you senses. He gave us the ability to learn from our senses, from our sensuality. Our sensuality awards each individual, and since we're talking about lovers, I'm going to stay on that. It awards the lover so many endless possibilities, endless mysteries, endless explorations. No experience is ever the same because senses are heightened or lowered or something else is added into it. It's like cooking. When you smell something cooking, you can smell it for miles and miles away, and you just, and you know if it's your mama cooking it, you're going to get it, and oh, you just can't wait to taste it, and your stomach starts growling, and your mouth starts salivating, and you can't stop smelling it, and you, everything about you, your hormones start secreting, your brain goes active, everything about you wakes up. That is your sensual coming to life and knowing what's coming, what's going to satisfy, what's going to gratify it. And if it's not your mama that's cooking, you get, dang, I wish that was mine. I wish I was going to have some of that. You know, we get like that. It's sealed up. When we are walking and when we are fresh in our lives, when we're young and we haven't experienced heartbreak and pain and rejection and any of these things, when we are just so open and our senses are so on point, we're just so open to everything, to whoever we're attracted to that person. He becomes our imaginary lover, whether we actually physically consummate that or not. That person is who you daydream about. That person is who you smell. You don't even have to be in the same room with them. You know, you don't have to have touched them. Everything is intensified simply by your senses being on alert by that person, that person's essence. It's not, doesn't have to, we have so many different ways to be sensual. Eyes and vision is just one way. If we were to take away the sight, would we still be attracted to the same people, to the same type of people, to the same soul essence of people? If we were to take away our hearing and we couldn't hear them, we couldn't hear their voices, would we still be attracted to them? See, would you still, if you couldn't kiss, if you couldn't taste them, would you still be attracted to them? As lovers, we rely upon our senses to feed us information and to gratify our thoughts, and our thoughts and our desires is what set our nerve centers on point. It's what makes us hot. It's what makes us wet. It's what makes the juices flow. It's what makes you want to experience another being with all of your senses. It's not just sex. I don't want you to just put it in me and bump and grind and you're all done. No. That is so, don't get me wrong, sex is sex. And it serves its purposes at its times. There are times when you don't want to be sensual. You want to be sexual, and you want that animal nature to just come charging out and pounce on somebody. I get that. I have that. I'm all about that. But the majority of my instincts are sensual, and you've got to be able to stroke my sensuality to get anywhere with me. And it's not about what you look like. It's not about what you have. Not about if you got this very white voice. It's not about any of it. It's not about what you drive. It's not about what you wear. It is about your sensual soul essence and the way it portrays itself to me, the way it plays with my essence, the soul remembrance, what it brings forth. Do I remember taste? Do I remember a smell? Do I want to touch your skin? Do I want to explore you? Do I want to touch your head? Do I want to look in your eyes and kiss your eyelids? It's about depth, and it's about the exploration. That is what intimacy is. You cannot see into me. I cannot see into me if I'm not using my senses. All of them. That's what makes sexuality sacred, is when you use your senses to hone your energy and to fire it up and to get it going and to direct it and to exchange it. That's what it's all about. And you lose so much when you're disconnected and repressed and you don't know this person, but you're trying to please them by giving them your body and trying to explore them by giving them your body, but you don't know who they are. You don't know the essence of them. And when you don't know the essence of someone, it's like screwing a toy. It's like having a toy. It's like masturbating. You might as well, because you're getting nothing. You're not getting the energy exchange that you need. As human beings, we come here needing to be touched, needing to be held, needing to see the adoration in the eyes of who we love, who we are attracted to. And we go through our life shape-shifting and denying and repressing and trying to please these people just so we can be. You can't please everyone. There's no way to please everyone. Stop trying. The most important person, entity, being that you need to impress, that you need to stimulate, that you need to awaken, is yourself. Because you have to step into your own flow in order to be able for someone else to really see you or know you. Who are you? Who? Are you this mystery being? What? If something is that big of a damn mystery, then it's because it doesn't know itself. See, man labeled woman a mystery because she bleeds, because she transforms herself constantly as a sensual being from Mary, the mother of God, into Mary Magdalene, the whore. We range. We have a wide range And we are sensual creatures. We operate from that space. Everyone who is intimate with their feminine essence is sensual. And I want to speak about men too, because men sometimes can be more sensual than a woman. And a man, a sensual man, can teach you how to be sensual, how to appreciate the senses. That's what it's about. When you become lovers, it's about exploring. It's about sharing. It's about expanding. It's not about changing someone into some expectation or making them fit an attachment or this prerequisite thing that you have in your mind. No. 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 It's allowing them to be themselves. It's about allowing you to be yourself. You say, I will allow you to be yourself, but you have to allow me to be myself. And let's explore ourselves. Let's see what we can learn. There's so much more. Let's explore it together. That's what sacred sexuality is all about. It's about exploring things together in that way. And I'm checking back and forth, and it's all good. I just want to stay in this flow because I'm really feeling it. Another thing I want to say is that when you find that space within yourself where you have identified your likes and your dislikes, what pleases your sensual appetites, because we all have very different needs, and our needs are based upon what has been passed down, past life experiences, previous relationships, whether they were intimate, sexual relationships, platonic relationships, familial relationships, religious relationships. All of that plays into our sensuality and sexuality, our ability to express ourselves with another person. And you just don't go into something where you don't know anything about that person. You get to know them. You get to know them. You ask them questions, very blunt questions. There's no kitty cornering around it. There's no sugarcoating it. There's no beating around the bush. Just flat, plain out truth. That's what you want. Feed me that. Don't give me no bullshit. Fuck that. You can keep that. You can give that to the next one. And I'm going to get a little raw because it's coming out that way. But it is what it is. And if you want the sweetness, then you have to get sensual. Because the more sensual you are, the sweeter that honeypot is going to get, I'm telling you. If you don't know how to stir your woman's imagination or your partner, let me say partner, because this is for both, this is for male and female. If you don't know how to stir your partner's imagination, what you're getting is not even half of their best. Didn't it blow your mind? And it's really nothing because you're just going off of sexual feelings. You haven't stirred the inner being yet. You haven't touched that core, that center that allows a woman's yoni to really open to the highest degree. See, a woman can let you in, and she'll let you in to a certain point, consciously or unconsciously. And that's what you get. And you may think, whoa, that's the best, that's good, that's rah, rah, rah. But I'm going to tell you this, as being a woman, when a woman feels loved, when a woman feels that you feel she is beautiful, when a woman knows that you care, she will take you deeper inside of her than anyone else has ever been, because you're giving her something that she needs at a soul level. And that's true for men too. If you can open up to a man, oh, that man is, whoa, you know, and he's going to dig deeper within his own essence to meet you where you are. And what you create, the synergy that's created from that kind of union, it is beyond words. That is the great mystery, you know. That is the great mystery. When you can reach that point, that plateau of giving and receiving and being at your sensual best. So many people don't understand that. So many people think it's about sex. So many people think it's just about lust. So many people think it's just about a booty, or it's just about a dick, or a cock, or a pussy, or a cunt. And they like to throw these words, and sometimes these words do different things. If you don't know your partner, you could trigger them to shutting down, closing up, to freezing. But if you know your partner, you know what to say that turns them on. That's going to make them open up even more. That's going to make them get hotter, wetter, and want to go deeper inside of you and in you. Sensuality is about the merging of the souls. It is about two spirits getting together and creating its own universe, connecting with that universe, going back to that universe, to what has always been and what will always be. This is not some fairy tale stuff. We have been so indoctrinated with lies and repression and moralistic judgments and values and secrecy and everything else that we have lost sensuality in the process. And those of us who are sensual are looked at as weird, artistic, or this and that and this, because we express ourselves in a way that gratifies our senses. And we won't allow someone who is just sexually graphic to come into our worlds and voice that upon us. No, we don't want that. We don't want the video girl bumping up and down and doing that's what? That's not attractive. We want the painting, we want the stillness, we want the beauty, we want the invitation to join them. That's what sensuality is. It's an invitation. When you smell that cooking, that's an invitation to your senses. You want that invitation from your partner. You want that invitation to strip down bare. Strip your soul bare. Give me everything that I find there. Let me explore your hidden treasures, those that you don't share with everyone else, that nobody else knows about. So when you look in that person's eye, you know them at their nakedest, at their barest, at their highest and their lowest and their most intent. And no one else has that experience. No one but you. And that is where your love and your need for them, that's the foundation. That is the foundation. And so many people don't know how to get there. And so many people settle for less than. You know, we placate ourselves. We make ourselves small, and we make our own needs small, and we make our own needs go away. We become what that person thinks we should be, what society thinks we should be. We repress our own feelings. We feel ashamed of our bodies if we're fat or if we're too thin or if our breasts isn't a certain size or shape, or when we get older, when our breasts sag, or our belly flops, or our thighs should bump together. Oh my God, you don't have a gap? Baby, please, please, I'll show you a gap. Come here. You have to go there, and you have to, that is, explore the mystery of your sensuality. Now, I am going to be celebrating a very sensual man whom I love, and his birthday was yesterday, and his name is Maxwell. And I'm going to play his song now, Submerge Till We Become the Sun. It is one of my favorites, and I just want to give a shout out to my sister, Jan, the Internet Diva, Adaro, on Facebook, and also Blog Talk radio host. I love you. We sometimes exchange our love with Maxwell. Right now, he's mine. I don't care what she says. He's mine. So, here's Maxwell, Submerge Till We Become the Sun.
Yeah.
All right, that was Maxwell, Till We Become the Sun. And I'm just going to say this, okay, because it is so true. You don't get no more sensual than this man. You know, let the night become enlightened and let your atmosphere surround me and till we become the sun. Hello. Hello? Come on now. Come on. Come on. It just, he can talk to me anytime. I have something that I'm going to share, and it is a poem that I wrote. I'm going to be sharing a couple of poems today simply because this is about sensuality and this is about feelings, and poetry is a very sensual way to express thoughts, your views, your visions, no matter where it comes from, the darkness, your shadow, or your light. So, this is Illusion Feelings, and is written by me. It's not that long. From the entrails of my illusions, I climb above my delusions, contrary to thought, no longer seeking seclusion, finally realizing solace lies within the fusion. I don't need a contusion to walk around in confusion. More to me than a memory, you are alive. And wide awake I am, as we make love once again in the greenest fields of the illusions. And the illusion fields is something that you will need to research if you don't know what they are. And I'm just going to leave that there, and I'm going to move to the next one. It's called She Be Too. And let me just say that this one is a very deep one for me, because when I wrote this, I was writing from a place of awareness of myself and where I am in my sensual growth and acceptance and knowing of where I am. And these are my words. She be too. Vulnerable, wide open, no wounds, not wounded, sad, happy, hopeful, helpful, needy, in need of love, a lover, a giver, a receiver. Abundance inside the scarce, harvest inside the drought. Bitter is the fruit whose bride price is bought. Heavy is the burden to be free. Free is the democracy of me. Letting go of control, realizing I am but 2 days old. Vulnerable. Wide open, no wounds, not wounded, sad, happy, hopeful, helpful, needy, in need of love, a lover, a giver, a receiver, and that is at peace. By me, Valerie Ames. And I'm going to go play another song right now, and then we'll come and we'll talk about some more sensuality. And this is I Want You to Want by Maxwell. Thank you. wanting to want you to want every drop. Don't get no more sensual than that, people. Just don't. While this was playing, Spirit and I were sitting over here having a little dialogue, and I was told to pull out my The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity by Julia Cameron. And I'm going to, it's a course in discovering and recovering your creative self. And I advise everybody, even if you aren't artistic in nature, even if you believe you are not artistic, I advise you to get this book because it will help unleash your sensuality in so many ways in your life, and not just artistic endeavors or creativity, but your own personal responses and just your way of being. This is the artist's way. It's a way of being. And so I'm going to just give you the basic principles of this book, and it starts, it's called Spiritual Electricity, the Basic Principles. This is the first principle. There are 10 of them. The first one is creativity is the natural order of life. Life is energy, pure creative energy. Number two, there is an underlying indwelling creative force infusing all of life, including ourselves. Number three, when we open ourselves to our creativity, we open ourselves to the creative's creativity within us and our lives. Number four, we are ourselves creations, and we, in turn, are meant to continue creativity by being creative ourselves. Five, creativity is God's gift to us. Using our creativity is our gift back to God. Six, the refusal to be creative is self-will and is counter to our true nature. And I'm going to stop here because this one is so important to sensuality. When you do not allow yourself to be sensual, you're using your will to be counter to your true nature. God gave you creativity. He gave you your senses so you could imagine, so you could broaden your experience, so you could go deeper within yourself. And for you to say, no, I don't see that, that's using your will to be obstinate, and you're being contrary to your own nature. Okay, number seven, when we open ourselves to exploring our creativity, we open ourselves to God, good, orderly direction. God equals good orderly direction. God equals good orderly direction. G-O-D equals good orderly direction. All right. Number eight. As we open our creative channel to the Creator, many gentle but powerful changes are to be expected. Number nine, it is safe to open ourselves up to greater and greater creativity. Stop limiting and stifling yourself to one aspect of yourself. Some of us hold fear. We put fear on such a pedestal. We blow it up bigger than the earth itself, bigger than the universe itself. And we think we're so teeny tiny to what our fear is. But we need to recognize, recognize, rethink that fear. and understand that within you is the creative ability to overcome any fear, any obstacle. Who is your God? You. You mean to tell me your God can't allow you to come overcome that? Then you're weak. I don't respect you or your God. I don't put no faith in that. You scared to know yourself intimately. How you gonna know me? How you gonna know my God? How you gonna bow down to my God if you can't even see the God in you? You can say namaste all you want to. You can say, oh, I'm conscious. Oh, I'm awake. Oh, I'm this. Oh, I'm that. But if you are not allowing your own creativity to grow, to expand, to move you beyond your comfort zone and your own patterned thinking, if you aren't repattering, I don't even know if that's a word. If you aren't cutting out and making your own designs as to who you are right now in this time, with the planets aligning and everything else going on, this new paradigm, if you aren't doing it, then you're behind the times. You are behind the times. You are asleep. Your alarm clock has gone off, and you have hit it and said, 10 more minutes, 10 more minutes, Mommy, 10 more minutes. Guess what? Mommy is saying, get your butt up. You're going to be late for school. This is school, people. You get what you put into it. You expand to how much you increase your own value and your own worth. And you do that by knowing the God in you. See, the God in you expands you. It helps you to rise above your own base desires and animalisms and physical needs and wants and understanding. It brings you into a mind frame that allows you to tap into your nerve endings and everything, grasp a hold of what they haven't used before. And you create. And you design and you give birth and you change it and you edit it and you rebirth it again. That is the process of the universe. That is co-creation. That is being a co-creator with God. That is what Jesus, Muhammad, all Buddha, all of the ancient masters, aim to help you to understand your co-creative energy and what it means and how to unleash it and how to expand it and then how to direct that energy out into the world so it reflects and manifests itself to everybody because we are one. And when we start behaving and knowing ourselves to be gods and godlike, we can get away from the petty separateness. We can get away from the judgments and labels. Because we will know we are God. Not just go around saying it. Not just wearing it on our shirts and putting it on bumper stickers and seeing who can outright who with their definition of it. But live it. Express it. Created everywhere in the world, in the universe. That's what we're here for. That's what we've been waiting for. That's what we are reborn to do. That's the mission. That's your purpose. That's who you are. That's why you're here. Wake up. Okay. Back to the artist's way. And I'm going to read you a few of the quotes. One of them is by Giacomo Puccini, and he created the music for Madame Butterfly. The music of this opera was dictated to me by God. I was merely instrumental in putting it on paper and communicating it to the public. And Johannes Brahms, straightway the idea flowed in upon me, directly from God. Joseph Chilton Pierce, we must accept that this creative pulse within us is God's creative pulse itself. Mary Daly, in the creative potential itself, in human beings, that is the image of God. The Talmud, every blade of grass has its angel that bends over it and whispers, grow, grow. Stephen Grappelli, musician. Great improvisers are like priests. They are thinking only of their God. Louis Armstrong. What we play is life. Peter Kostenbaum. Creativity is harnessing universality and making it flow through your eyes. This is so powerful. When we think of ourselves and know ourselves to be sensual individuals, sensual lovers, lovers of life, not just lovers of our bodies and another person's flesh, but lovers of life, lovers of the universe, loving and experiencing and blending our senses and our imaginations and knowing and exploring. This is the great mystery. When you can identify with your senses and you go and you use yourself as the tool to explore the great mystery. And that great mystery is feeling, expression, knowing, loving, being, thinking, smelling, touching, tasting, imagining. Is, I guess, the artist's way. That is the sensual way. We are sensual beings. We were born sensual beings. And I'm going to play another Maxwell song, and then we'll get back to some more of the artist's way and about sensuality. Let's get to to the Cops Come Knocking. And I just want to say I love this song because it is just so powerful to me. And here it is. Okay, come on. Knocking. And I want to read you something that I wrote. It's called, it's a little story. It's called When the Ass Speaks, Truth is Able to Reside in Glass Houses. And I wrote this May 18th, and here it is. Son of Set in your ways, twin brother of Osiris, always wants change. Hear me as I whisper wisdom in your ear. You seek her through the baptismal waters of her universal womb. And she welcomes the encounters as she allows you access between the gates of heaven and hell. For it was she who cast the original spell. Her words, her wishes, her wisdom is for you to return. She be all patient as she rewards your growth and ascension. I, however, grow impatient with you, your ways, your whys, and your wherefores. We gave you but a simple task to prove to us your intent, but by your disregard of what was asked, you show your contempt, your arrogance inside your ignorance, and your disdain for our counsel. As dragon blood burns upon the altar of our discontent, your disconnection is noted. Your transform creation is at hand. Expand your microscopic vision back to the fertile lands. Remember your purpose to heal the bond that lies between brothers of different mothers, to transfigure the form of lowly men into the higher state of spirituality. All is not lost. It has only to be found. To understand the one's nature is to understand the divine plan. Fear is a powerful foe, yet is defeated easily by absolute naked truth. Truth. Truth is the belief of your universal design to overcome all obstacles, even when your biggest foe stares back at you from the other side of the mirror. You know the one whose fangs you refuse to detach from your aorta, thus your heart remains hard, hidden, unknowable, unlovable, but in small measured doses out miserly as a copayment to your own health insurance, affording you assurance of longevity without serious commitment, because the heart must be guarded above all else. If it is broken again after this latest repair, you feel all is lost. Yet the child within warns, you must give it away in order to receive the nourishment that we need. Stop bleeding. Start seeing. Start believing. Commitment. For her is all or nothing. Give and take is the balance required. Ma'at keeps the scales leveled and alive, and you do not place dead sentiments on living scales. You desecrate the very intention and integrity of fair exchange, which is the commerce of the entire universe. I do not say these things to heap coal upon your pyre. I say them to give you new insight. For to be with her, you must be born again, taken through the doors of the four, channeled up through the wheels of the seven, up to the ninth degree of change. Changelings we are in the vortex of the living cycle cipher. You are but one aspect of he. Understand, there are more, just like the ejaculation of seamen. Only a few may step upon her shore, each with the ability to join and co-create a new existence. She seeks true harmony, yin and yang, push and pull, give and take. Reciprocity will not be ignored, put in a corner, tied up, or shunned. She requires your utmost attention, or you will remain the enigma of your best and worst fantasy, alone in your sovereignty, ruler of your demons, your lusts, and your few joys. Unable to cash in or bail out, stuck in the safety of the purgatory you built and enforce with your blind will and willfulness. Iron cords are easily cut by she who is able to free the soul, but you cannot nourish that which refuses to eat. And your regurgitations, she is less able to digest and even process, because it does not make sense. So it does not generate profit, only deficit. His story shows you have taken her for granted throughout this time called now. Even while you seek to tell her of your guts and glory, she pines for the truth that vibrates from the tone of the one she fell in love with long ago. Her place seated on the right hand of God, Goddess, firstborn daughter, representative of the universal womb, she who gives birth to light, light beings, light thoughts, and sun and the moon. She speaks to you now. Hear her. Transformation begins with the belief in the need. The need summons hope, and from hope, all is to be born and reborn. Slates are washed clean, not whitewashed with a new coat of slapstick or the ancient jargon of black mirrors. Twice born, you have been my king, my guide, my God, my brother, my beloved, you who I willingly place upon my own throne as co-creator, as husband, you who willingly, foolishly leaves my side time upon time and once again. My love is like woe, and yet I began to think I waste my pearls upon one who only listens to himself. Thus, my position is compromised and confusion sets in and takes up residence in the innuendo of not really knowing, not really trusting, because you dropped the very ball that you needed to enter forever. That which was only a phone call away. That which you choose to and chose to ignore. Why? Who knows? Who cares? It matters not to me. But that is your answer as to why you will lose her interest. With this truth, I bite you. With the venom of my truth, I infect you. You will either die from its potency or be reborn from its healing essence. Either way, change, transformation is upon you. Be careful of what you wish for, because you just might get it. And that's the end of that piece. And I was in a deep place because I woke up with a dream that had taken place of a serpent coming and biting me, and me growing fangs like a vampire and biting my love. So this was very deep. That's where that came from. And one of the things that came to me with this particular vision, download, understanding, is that of the serpent. When the Bible says the serpent would crawl upon its belly, it meant by its sensations it would know and learn. It would not know from a cerebral place from where it had. This time around, upon its belly, it would crawl. And it would know from its gut, from its instinct, back to where it needed to, not from the head, not from that logical place that resists sensations, that place that allows shame of body and doubt to reside, that place of good and bad. So we are to crawl upon our bellies. We are to become sensual creatures, wise sensual creatures. Okay. I'm going to read again from The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity by Julia Cameron. And this is in week two, but this is Recovering a Sense of Identity. And I'm going to read this because it is so powerful. Going sane. Trusting our creativity is new behavior for many of us. It may feel quite threatening initially, not only to us, but also to our intimates. We may feel and look erratic. This erraticism is a normal part of getting unstuck, pulling free from the muck that has blocked us. It is important to remember that at first flush, going sane feels like going crazy. There is a recognizable ebb and flow to the process of recovering our creative selves. As we gain strength, so will some of the attacks of self-doubt. This is normal, and we can deal with these stronger attacks when we see them as symptoms of recovery. Common self-attacks are, okay, so I did okay this week, but it's just a temporary thing. Okay, so I got the morning pages done. I probably did them wrong. Okay, so now I need to plan something big and do it right away. Who am I kidding? I'll never recover. Not right away. Not ever. These attacks are groundless, but very convincing to ourselves. Buying into them enables us to remain stuck and victimized. Just as a recovering alcoholic must avoid the first drink, the recovering artist must avoid taking the first think. For us is really self-doubt. I don't think this is any good. These attacks can come from either internal or external sources. We can neutralize them once we recognize them as sort of a creative virus. Affirmations are a powerful antidote for self-hate, which commonly appears under the mask of self-doubt. And I hope you're grasping this. Self-hate appears as self-doubt. Self-hate appears as self-doubt. Self-hate appears as self-doubt. Early in our creative recovery, self-doubt can lure us into self-sabotage. A common form for this sabotage is showing someone our morning pages. Remember, the morning pages are private and not intended for the scrutiny of well-meaning friends. One newly unblocked writer showed his morning pages to a writer friend who was still blocked. When she critiqued them, he blocked again. Do not let your self-doubt turn into self-sabotage. Poisonous playmates. Creativity flourishes when we have a sense of safety and self-acceptance. Your artist, like a small child, is happiest when feeling a sense of security. And I'm going to stop just for a minute, too. That is so important for the inner child, for the inner artist to feel secure and able to create. That is a necessity. Security is a necessity. Security is a necessity to your creativity. As our artist's protective parent, we must learn to place our artist with safe companions. Toxic playmates can capsize our artist's growth. Not surprisingly, the most poisonous playmates for us as recovering creatives are people whose creativity is still blocked. Our recovery threatens them. As long as we are blocked, we often felt that it was arrogance and self-will to speak of ourselves as creative artists. The truth is that it was self-will to refuse to acknowledge our creativity. Of course, this refusal had its payoff. We can wander and worry about our arrogance instead of being humble enough to ask to move through our fear. We could fantasize about art instead of doing the work. By not asking the great creator's help with our creativity, and by not seeing the great creator's hand in our creativity, we could proceed to righteously ignore our creativity and never have to take the risk of fulfilling it. Your blocked friends may still be indulging in all these comforting self-delusions. If they are having trouble with your recovery, they are still getting a payoff from remaining blocked. Perhaps they still get an anorectic high from the martyrdom of being blocked, or they still collect sympathy and wallow in self-pity. Perhaps they still feel smug thinking about how much more creative they can be than those who are out there doing it. These are toxic behaviors for you now. Do not expect your black friends to applaud your recovery. That's like expecting your best friends from the bar to celebrate your sobriety. How can they when their own drinking is something they want to hold on to? Black friends may find your recovery disturbing. Your getting unblocked raises the unsettling possibility that they too could become unblocked and move into authentic creative risk rather than bench-sitting cynicism. Look out. Be alert to subtle sabotage from friends. You cannot afford their well-meaning doubts right now. Their doubts will reactivate your own. Be particularly alert to any suggestion that you have become a selfish or different. These are red alert words for us. They are attempts to leverage us back into our old ways for the sake of someone else's comfort, not our own. Blocked creatives are easily manipulated by guilt. Our friends, feeling abandoned by our departure from the ranks of the blocked, may unconsciously try to guilt trip us into giving up our newly healthy habits. It is very important to understand that the time given to morning pages is time between you and God. You best know your answers. You will be led to a new source of support as you begin to support yourself. And in reading this, I'm going to stop just for a moment again. In reading this, what came to my mind and what has been coming to my mind lately before I pulled this and read this is the story of Job. The story of Job in the Bible and his wife and his friends who were his counselors who felt that they knew better about the situation than he did himself. And judge the situation by their own standards. I couldn't do that. I would just cuss God and die. But Job, within his own knowing and in his own relationship with God, said, no, there has to be something more than this. I know my creative creator. He is not limited to this. So I have been thus blessed by this, this, and this. And if my creative God wishes to now take this, this, and this away, it is his will that I will follow. It is the creative mind of creativity that I will follow because it is wiser than anything I have known or know. And I will not trust my human feelings of I can endure this another moment. I will sit in my creativity. I will sit in my Godship. I will sit here at the feet of my creative source. And I will be ministered to by him, not you, not your thoughts, not what you think I should do based upon your life experience and your attachments and your philosophy, but what I know to be the truth of my creator. That is the story of Job. stick to your truth regardless of who comes around and tells you what, regardless of how well you know them, regardless of the intimacy that they share with you, regardless of what they have been through, they do not own your experience. Only you own your experience. Only you know of your connection with creativity and creation. No one dictates that but you. And I'm going to read a quote by Doris Lessing. All sanity depends on this, that it should be a delight to feel heat strike the skin, a delight to stand upright, knowing the bones are moving easily under the flesh. And this by Jody Hayes. Snipers are people who undermine your efforts to break unhealthy relationship patterns. How many snipers do you have in your circle? Robert Louis Stevenson. To know what you prefer instead of humbly saying amen to what the world tells you ought to prefer is to have kept your soul alive. Shakti Gawain. Every time you don't follow your inner guidance, you feel a loss of energy, loss of power, a sense of spiritual deadness. All right? And back to this reading, recovering a sense of identity in week two. Be very careful to safeguard your newly recovering artist. Often, creativity is blocked by our falling in with other people's plans for us. We want to set aside time for our creative work, but we feel we should do something else instead. As blocked creatives, we focus not on our responsibilities to ourselves, but on our responsibilities to others. We tend to think such behavior makes us good people. It doesn't. It makes us frustrated people. The essential element in nurturing our creativity lies within nurturing ourselves. Through self-nurturing, we nurture our inner creation, our inner connection to the great creator. Through this connection, our creativity will unfold. Paths will appear for us. We need to trust the great creator and move out in faith. Repeat, the great creator has gifted us with creativity. Our gift back is our use of it. Do not let friends squander your time. Be gentle but firm and hang tough. The best thing you can do for your friends is to be an example through your own recovery. Do not let their fears and second thoughts derail you. Soon enough, the techniques you learn will enable you to teach others. Soon enough, you will be a bridge that will allow others to cross over from self-doubt into self-expression. For right now, protect your artist by refusing to show your morning pages to interested bystanders or to share your artist's date with friends. Draw a sacred circle around your recovery. Give yourself the gift of faith that you are on the right track. You are. As your recovery progresses, you will come to experience a more comfortable faith in your creator and your creator within. You will learn that it is actually easier to write than not write, paint than not paint, and so forth. You will learn to enjoy the process of being a creative channel and to surrender your need to control the result. You will discover the joy of practicing your creativity. The process, not the product, will become your focus. You own healing. Your own healing is the greatest message of hope for others. I'm going to stop again for a moment, and I'm going to play some music because I want you to be able to grasp and hold all of that for a moment. I want you to be able to think it over and think about it. And I'm going to play another Maxwell song. And this is truly, truly, truly one of my favorites. It's called Whenever, Wherever, and Whatever. And again, it is my favorite, and this is Maxwell. And here it is. About that. That was Maxwell. Whenever, wherever, whatever. And that is one of my favorites as well as a poet and a lover of words. It speaks to my soul. It allows me to express myself in a sensual manner. It allows me to observe Maxwell in a very sensual manner. To me, there are several men who are, I'm attracted to sensual men. You got to arouse my senses. Some people think it's intellect. No. Some people think it's about what you look like, your physicality. No. Some people think it's about a voice. No. For me, it's the arousal of my senses. Everything. It has to be a combination. It has. You have to make me come alive, make me want to explore you, make me want to know you, make me want to hear more of your story, to know more of you because you are an extension of me. That's what sensuality is all about. And when we're looking for a lover, it shouldn't be who can give us the best orgasm or who can please us or who can do this. It's about who makes us come alive. Who transforms us or helps to transform us or gives us the foundation or the catapult that we can, you know, press upon to spring upwards, to fly into the sensual universe. Because the universe is all about sensuality. The universe, the womb, is a sensual place. It's a house of sensuality. Everything about it is sensual. We are sensual creatures living upon the earth. We inhabit her as she inhabits us. We experience her as she experiences us. If we are toxic, then what are we experiencing? A toxic earth. If we are co-creative, and at peace, then we are in a co-creative earth who is also at peace. We have to bring about the changes, and it starts within ourselves, and it starts with knowing ourselves and allowing ourselves to be. It's about knowing your balance, where your balance point lies. Everybody has a shadow and dark part. Everybody has an enlightened, authentic part. It is not about to be so far left or so far right. It is to be in the middle. The middle ground is where creativity happens. The best of creativity happens right there when you can allow all of your essence to blend, to merge, to express itself. In shades of light, dark, gray, white, black. And then you splash that color, that passion, that desire, the intensity. Everything comes from what you put into it. And it takes you whenever, whatever, wherever you want to go. Okay, back to reading. Again, this comes from The Artist's Way. The Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity, A Course in Discovering and Recovering Your Creative Self by Julia Cameron. And here we go. I just want to look at my time for a minute, okay? I've got about 15 more minutes in this show. Crazy makers. A related thing creators do to enjoy being creative is to involve themselves with crazy makers. Crazy makers are those personalities that create storm centers. They are often charismatic, frequently charming, highly innovative, and powerfully persuasive. And for the creative person in their vicinity, they're enormously destructive. You know the type. Charismatic, but out of control. Long on problems and short on solutions. Crazy makers are the kind of people who can take over your whole life to fix uppers. They are irresistible. So much to change. So many distractions. If you are involved with a crazy maker, you probably know it already. You certainly recognize the thumbnail description in the paragraph above. Crazy makers like drama. If they can swing it, they are the star. Everyone around them functions as supporting cast, picking up their cues, their interests, and their exits from the crazy maker's crazy whims. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, learn to get in touch with the silence within yourself and know that everything in this life has a purpose. Some of the most profoundly destructive crazy makers I have ever encountered are themselves famous artists. They are the kind of artists that give the rest of us bad names. Often larger than life, they acquire that status by feeding on the life energies of those around them. For this reason, many of the most crazy artists in America are found surrounded by a cadre of supporters as talented as they are, but determined to subvert their own talent in the service of the crazy-making king. I am thinking of a movie set I visited several years ago. The filmmaker was one of the giants of American cinema. His stature was unmistakable, and so was his identity as a crazy maker. Given that all filmmaking is demanding, his sets are far more so. Longer hours, long bouts of paranoia, intrigue and inter-sign politics amid rumors that the set was bugged. This crazy maker king addressed his actors over a loudspeaker system, while he, like the Wizard of Oz, secreted himself away in a large and luxuriously equipped trailer cave. Over the past 2 decades, I've watched many directors at work. I was married to a profoundly gifted director, and I have directed a feature myself. I've often remarked how closely a film crew resembles an extended family. In the case of this crazy maker king, the crew resembled nothing so much as an alcoholic family. The alcoholic drinker, thinker, surrounded by his tiptoeing enablers, all pretending that his outsized ego and his concomitant demands were normal. On that crazy maker set, the production lurched off schedule and over budget from King Baby's unreasonable demands. A film crew is essential, a crew of experts, and to watch these estimable experts become disheartened was a strong lesson for me in the poisonous power of crazy making. Brilliant set designers, costume designers, sound engineers, not to mention actors, became increasingly injured as the production ran its devastating course. It was against the crazy-making directors' personal dramas that they struggled to create the drama that was meant to go on scene. Like all good movie people, this crew was willing to work long hours for good work. What discouraged them was working those hours in the service of ego instead of art. The crazy-making dynamic is grounded in power, so any group of people can function as an energy system to be exploited and drained. Crazy makers can be found in almost any setting, in almost any art form. Fame may help to create them, but since they feed on power, any power source will do. Although quite frequently, crazy makers are found among the rich and famous. They are common even among commoners. Right in the nuclear family, there's a reason we use that word. A resident crazy maker may often be found pitting family member against family member, undercutting anyone's agenda but his or her own. I am thinking now of a destructive matriarch of my acquaintance, the titular head of a large and talented clan. She has devoted her extensive energies to destroying the creativity of her children, always choosing critical moments for her sabotage, her plants, her bombs, to explode just as her children approach success. The daughter, struggling to finish a belated college degree, finds herself saddled with a sudden drama the night before her final exam. The son, with a critical job interview, is gifted with a visitation just when he needs to focus the most. Do you know what the neighbors are saying about you? The crazy maker will often ask, and the beleaguered student mother will hear a horrific round of gossip that leaves her battered, facing her exam weak, beset by feelings of, what's the use? Do you realize you're ruining your own marriage with this possible new job? And the son's hopeful career move is ashes before it begins. Whether they appear as your overbearing mother, your manic boss, your needy friend, or your stubborn spouse, the crazy makers in your life share destructive patterns that make them poisonous for any sustained creative work. Crazy makers break deals and destroy schedules. They show up 2 days early for your wedding and expect to be waited on hand and foot. They rent a vacation cabin larger and more expensive than the one agreed upon, and then they expect you to foot the bill. Shakti Gawain says, what I am actually saying is that we need to be willing to let our intuition guide us and then be willing to follow that guidance directly and fearlessly. Crazy makers expect special treatment. They suffer a wide monopoly of mysterious ailments that require care and attention whenever you have a deadline looming or anything else that draws your attention from the crazy maker's demands. The crazy maker cooks her own special meal in a house full of hungry children and does nothing to feed the kids. The crazy maker is too upset to drive right after he has vented enormous verbal abuse on the heads of those around him. I am afraid Daddy will have a heart attack, the victim starts thinking, instead of, how do I get this monster out of my house? Crazy makers discount your reality. No matter how important your deadline or how critical your work trajectory at the moment, crazy makers will violate your needs. They may act as though they hear your boundaries and respect them, but in practice, act is the operative word. Crazy makers are the people who call you at midnight or 6 a.m. saying, I know you asked me not to call you at this time, but crazy makers are the people who drop by unexpectedly to borrow something you can't find or don't want to lend them. Even better, they call and ask you to locate something they need, then fail to pick it up. I know you're on a deadline, they say, but this will only take a minute, your minute. Crazy makers spend your time and money. If they borrow your car, they return it late with an empty tank. Their travel arrangements always cost you time and money. They demand to be met in the middle of your workday at the airport miles from town. I didn't bring taxi money, they say when confronted with, but I'm working. Crazy makers triangulate those they deal with because crazy makers thrive on energy. Your energy. They set people against one another in order to maintain their own power position, dead center. That's where they can feed most directly on the negative energies they stir up. You know, so-and-so is telling me, you didn't get to work on time today. A crazy maker may relate to you. You obligingly get mad at so-and-so and miss the fact that the crazy maker has used heresy to set you off kilter emotionally. Crazy makers are expert blamers. Nothing that goes wrong is ever their fault, and to hear them tell it, the fault is usually yours. If you hadn't cashed that child support check, it would never have bounced. One crazy-making ex-husband told his struggling for serenity former spouse. Eddie Cantor gives this advice. Slow down and enjoy life. It's only the scenery you miss by going too fast. It's not only the scenery you miss by going too fast. You also miss the sense of where you are going and why. So, if you wonder why I incorporated this into this, first of all, because Spirit told me to, now I understand why. And also, because we need to use our senses in obtaining our lovers. And if we go after crazy makers, they're going to make us crazy. They're going to make our life crazy because their life is crazy. They feed off of our erratic energy because their energy is erratic. Ground yourself. Use your senses to observe your lover or your potential lover. Are they giving? Are they stuck? Are they emotionally free? What do they invest in themselves emotionally, sensually? How do they express themselves? Is it just in a form of lust and rut? Or is it in a form of love and giving and receiving generosity? Where do they come from out of their own need? What do they want to receive? What can you give them? What can you exchange with them? What do they have to give to you? All they have to give is lust and anger and confusion. Then don't be surprised at what your relationship is. You knew going in, your instincts told you. If nothing changes and you speak up on it and say, look, I really like you and I see God in you, but you are not allowing God to come without you. You're not expanding. You're staying in a place of fear. Regardless of if you see that or not, my senses tell me, and I know what I see. I sense fear. I smell fear. I touch fear. I taste fear. All over you. And I don't want to bring that back into me. Excuse me. Or back into my life. Or back into my energy. At all. Erect a wall. Allow that person to know how you feel. Allow that person time to correct and change and enhance their behavior, not for you, but for themselves. Give them a chance. But, you know, be honest with them and tell them, you know, I really like you, but, you know, this and this, that's crazy to me, and I can't get with that. That's not real to me. That's not true to me. It makes me feel blah, 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 blah. And that's communication. And without that communication, you have nothing. You cannot establish nothing because there's no foundation to build upon. There's only, what, imagination and unrealized realities and fantasies. And while that makes a good story, it doesn't make a good relationship. And we want to express ourselves in as sensual a way as possible. Because when we express ourselves sensually, we are connecting with the divine creative force within. And that is what comes out, you know? So let's do that. Let's learn to know ourselves sensually. Let's learn to explore ourselves sensually. Find things that open your senses. Spices, foods, water, sand, silk, velvet. Different things that will arouse you. Arouse your senses so that you can expand your emotions and your depth. That's what it's all about. This is Maxwell, Lifetime, and we're going to end the show with him. So, here he is. I knew I said I was going to end that with that song, but, you know, it sparked something in me. The first line or stanza or of that lyric or that song, I was reborn when I was broken. That's so powerful, and it made me want to read this poem that I wrote called The Rhyme and the Reason, and I guess I should add on to it, and the rebirth. And here it is. I can make it rain on the window pane of the right side of your brain, leaving a quick kiss akin to a stain, reviving memories just so you can maintain under the heavy strain of unconditional love ingrained, though not unable to be retrained. See, inside my mainframe, she been peeped your game. Don't worry, it's not you I blame. Too legit and wild to be tamed. You wanna play her like she's some silly dame. Baby boy, don't you know that's a damn shame? Ego gonna make you miss out on your twin flame. The red Dakini will love you, and you will never be the same. Make you wanna give her your daddy's last name. Do you need instructions on how to stake your claim? Your fame is not about who you were, but with her, who you became. All right, and that was written again by Miss Valerie Ames. That was me. And I just want to say I've got my writing mojo back. So I'm loving the sensual, artistic expression that Blog Talk Radio allows me to share with you. And I hope you've enjoyed Honeycomb Conversations. Enjoy, and we'll be back next week, hopefully with some more guests. All right, love, peace, blessings, be love, and be blessed.